Anyway.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. It's Saturday morning. It's raining here in the Pacific Northwest, kind of gloomy, and that kind of fits our conversation today. Not that it's a gloomy conversation as such, but that it's a topic I think we would all rather have being a little bit happier scenario. We are Three Women, Three Ways. We are Deborah, Pinkley, and Heather, and we have a varied experience, varied life experiences, varied education, varied experiences with the world. And we are here during our show to share some of our wisdom and humor and outlook with you, and we want you to share with us too. So before we introduce ourselves, let me remind you, give us a phone call at 646-378-0430. Join us in our conversation, which today is about Hope Solo. Pinkley, you want to introduce yourself first?
Yes, good morning, Heather and Deborah. This is Pinkley. My AKA, my name is Connie Sue Brown, and I am a survivor of domestic violence and sort of have that lens of the world at this point after 15 years of surviving and working and living to inspire others for peace and self-empowerment. And I've got my AA degree from the local community college and went on to get my bachelor's degree in social justice, and currently am involved in a local nonprofit sexual assault and domestic violence agency. Deborah, how about you this morning?
Hey, good morning. I am Deborah Adams, and I'm currently residing in Southwest Washington, sometimes referred to as Vancouver, Oregon, but it's really Vancouver, Washington, because we're so close to Portland. We're called a bedroom community of Portland, Oregon. But I'm thrilled to be here, and, you know, Heather, you made a comment about the weather. Well, that is just our normal winter weather, right? Overcast and a prediction of rain, so... we are right on target for our winter.
And Deborah, how do you come to our show?
I come to our show from the perspective of personal life, academic study, and work experience. So I've lived it, I've studied it, and I have worked it, and that's domestic violence and all forms of violence against women.
Yeah,
how about you,
Heather? I love that. That tagline, I lived it, I worked it, and I studied it. My tagline is kind of like, I lived it, I survived it, and now I'm learning about it. But I also come from a background that is involved in women's issues, and I decided that I was going to take a more academic route to try and help other people in that situation and to try and understand my own situation. So I went back to school at the grand old age of and got a master's degree in public administration with a focus on domestic violence, and for the last 4 years I've been working on a PhD in psychology to focus on... Pardon?
You're getting close, dear. You almost
Yeah,
did.
I have one class in that dissertation, and hopefully it will help me do some research into what will help women and what will, you know, improve the lot of women who have found themselves in an abusive situation. And speaking of which, brings us right over to Hope Amelia Solo. Now, for those of you who do not know Hope Solo, Pinkley, you have a little bit more background on her. She's local here to the Pacific Northwest, isn't she?
Well, actually, Heather, this is Deb. I was going to do that part.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And the reason I asked to do that part is because Hope is from Richland, Washington, and I graduated from Pasco High School, which is so Pasco, Kennewick, and Richland are called the Tri-Cities. And they're in the southeast corner right along the Columbia River. A very unique little set of towns, I feel. And she is about 31 years old. She graduated from the University of Washington, where she was a nationally recognized soccer player. And she started life with a kind of a rough, sounds to me like a little bit of a rough start. She, her dad is, and I read a bio of her, and she only lists her father's name on that bio, which I found interesting because her father was listed as an embezzler and a con man and a philanderer. He eventually, after leaving jail, eventually was homeless and was not in her life until she was an adult. And it also says her she was raised by a strong-willed mother. No surprise there, right, ladies?
Yeah, yeah, let's blame
mom,
the mother.
Yeah, strong-willed mother. Where would that come from?
Mm-hmm.
So what I thought was interesting, because Hope also wrote a memoir, and how it describes her mother, she was raised by a strong-willed mom on the scorched earth of defunct nuclear testing sites. What kind of image does that bring up for you? I mean, that looks that's like out of, you know, Scaryville, but it's really not that bad there, I promise you.
Well, it is prairie, you know. I mean, it's kind of like prairie,
yeah,
but
it's desert. It's desert, and they farm through irrigation. And
wow.
So it is a unique, really unique area, but it's not, it doesn't look like scorched earth on the defunct nuclear testing sites, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, what, Deborah, can I interrupt? What else does it say about her mother?
Well, that's all it said about her mother. It didn't give her mother's name. That's all it said about her mom. And then, like I said, interesting that she, her father is named. His name is Jeffrey. So Hope's questions the authenticity of their last name. She doesn't believe or, you know, under she doesn't completely agree with that being their last name. But just a little bit of her athletic history. She was on the she is the goalkeeper on the United States Women's National Soccer Team. She's been there since 2000. She has gotten 2 gold medals in the Olympics for being this high-powered goalkeeper. She's very much known as a prickly. She's got a prickly attitude, and she's very outspoken.
Huh, she kind of sounds strong-willed, like some mother I've heard about. Yeah,
yeah, I see some connection there. And the way that we're kind of framing the conversation is because Hope is kind of a national figure. In 2011, she also participated in the Dance with Stars reality TV show, if you've heard of that.
Dancing with the Stars? Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Dancing with the Stars, yes.
Was she good? Was she good at that? I would think she would.
Made it to the semifinals, I think, near the end. Yeah.
Huh,
yeah.
Very good. Good.
Yeah. But the way we're framing it for our Three Women, Three Ways show today is, is the media asking the right questions? Because they're very much focused on Hope being, you know, this power woman, athletic, outspoken, prickly attitude, that has posed nude and written this kind of memoir that kind of is supposed to be telling it like it is. And the fact that she got, her and her fiance were involved in what was termed a domestic violence assault for arrest the night before their wedding.
Yeah. Well, let's back up a little bit and let's talk about this wedding. I mean, the reason, there's a number of reasons that people are looking at it in the news. One is because of the boyfriend slash husband. He has quite a background. Now, he was also, was he with the Seahawks, Deborah?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, so he but he also has a long history of brushes with the law. Including some assault charges. I don't know whether he was ever convicted of that. He had a lot of drinking and just a whole scattered history from the time he was 18 that's on record of pretty bad behavior.
Right.
Now, here's a question. Why would somebody like Hope Solo, who has so much to offer and who's such a bright star and who clearly is such a free spirit and in-charge woman, hook up with some loser like that?
Well, see, so that's probably what more of the people in the general public are asking, but from my point of view, that is the wrong question to be asking.
Okay.
I mean, instead of focusing on her career and all those things, because I know from a professional view that survivors of domestic violence cross all those socioeconomical dividers. It doesn't matter, right, if you have a GED or a PhD. It doesn't matter if you're athletic or you're big or you're little. You have the propensity just by being female, being involved in a domestic violence relationship. So let's just go back to the whole history, though, of the marriage kind of contract in our society, right?
Mm-hmm.
You must be in a couple. You must be, It must be heterosexual, right? That's the standard.
Mm-hmm. Well, some people are getting a little looser about that, but not a lot.
That's generally it, whether it's stated that boldly or not, but that's the expectation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, and that you're going to fall in love, and you're going to get married, and you're going to have a family, and you're going to have a house and a white picket fence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are some of those bigger stereotypes and beliefs that are out there. And
okay.
So all of that is impacting, plus you get the hormonal influx, the sexual attraction and your physical attraction, and then you've got your cultural and social norms working on you. What do you think, Pinkley? Is that going to impact your ability to make decisions?
Yeah, and I agree. One of the things that I'm still sitting here thinking about and trying to get some more clarity on, and maybe there isn't any, was the statement about her description of where she lived. Can you go back to that, Deb?
Oh, you're still on that, huh?
I am.
Pinkley, I'm having trouble hearing you. Maybe you could talk a little bit louder?
Sure. I said,
okay. It was described,
better?
Richland, Washington,
sure.
Scorched earth of defunct nuclear testing sites.
Well, first of all, what I want to do is honor her point of view and her view of the world, and that doesn't say that statement encompasses all of that. But I think that, and again, I'm no psychologist, no therapist, but we often know that abusers are attracted to strong female women, but underneath there is this need for acceptance, perhaps some low self-esteem, and there's, again, I don't want to like put all the emphasis on her, because I think that, number one, as you said, Deb, this very quick involvement is just a huge red flag. For abusive,
yeah, for me that is definitely a red flag.
For abusive, controlling, and manipulating behavior.
Okay, back up a little bit, because I don't think we talked about the quick involvement. So if we're going to talk about that, let's just let the listeners know that basically this was a 2-month relationship. He beat her up, he assaulted her, he was arrested for doing so, and then a day or so after he got out of jail, they got married.
Heather, I think that's alleged beat her up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Alleged beat her up. He was arrested for beating her up.
He was arrested but was released because there was not enough evidence to hold him. It's still pending further investigation, charges still could be.
Okay. That was what he was arrested for, but apparently the charges are not yet confirmed. So, and he certainly hasn't had any trial. But when Pinkley's talking about the speed with which this has happened, 2 months. You know, 2 months, all that drama, bam, we're married. And so, Pinkley, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think we needed to let people know that.
Yeah, absolutely, and I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront. I think my thought pattern was kind of jumping all over the place, and which it often does. But there's so much interconnection here, and I don't want to blame or think that anything in her childhood or a mother and a father created this dynamic of Hope being a potential victim in what we're anticipating a domestic violence relationship. I would hope that she's happy and succeeds in a relationship, but from where our perspectives and our education and our training leads us to believe is that this is a very quick involved relationship, and you know, all I see
was the marriage being the honeymoon phase after a big explosion. Everything will be all right. She probably was the one who apologized. And
well,
I don't know what came over me. Yeah.
I'd like to interject here. The news report was that there was a fight at the home the night before their wedding. When the police showed up, everybody there was intoxicated. Hope's brother called the police and said there was two or three uninvited guests that were fighting with everybody. He used a stun gun on one of them, but people left before the police got there, supposedly. So the police come. The house is full of intoxicated people. Hope has a cut on her elbow. And when they find Jeremy Stevens, the fiancé, he's upstairs, what appears to be hiding under the bed. He claims he was sleeping and didn't hear any of it. But the police officers observed that there was dried blood on his clothing, and it looked like there had been a fight in that room. So based on Washington state law, they have the mandate to determine if there was some kind of assault, and they can take in the aggressor, right? They can arrest the aggressor. So
yes.
That's
if they determine there is an aggressor, they can arrest that person or persons.
Yes. So that's what the news reports say about the actual assault.
Well, and it's, I mean, come on. Why would you doubt that? I mean, we all go to sleep under our beds. I mean, you know, come on.
Well, I just, here's one example. So he allegedly has legal trouble stemming from 1998.
Yeah.
There's one listed as June 2nd, July 10th, and then in 2007, July 27th. Here's one that is just this huge red flag for me, and I'm sure our listeners would probably agree, but maybe not. There was arrest on charges of sexual assault against a 19-year-old University of Washington freshman after a fraternity party. And numerous witnesses testified the woman acted as if she'd been drugged. He did not face a criminal trial for rape due to what the quote-unquote prosecutor said was confusing and conflicting statements. However, the victim did file a civil suit, which resulted in a settlement. Now, of course, settlement doesn't preclude guilty or innocent. But the fact that the issues are being raised here, there is a pattern of potentially very destructive behavior on his part, and what I perceive as being, I am this person who can get away with anything and everything. There is no accountability.
Right.
Which is pretty typical of abusers, isn't it?
I'm
in charge here. I'm the one who has power.
Yeah, but I'd like to interject into this conversation. We know this about Mr. Jeremy Stevens now, after the fact. How do we know Hope had that information prior?
We don't, Deborah. You're absolutely right. We
do not know that Hope knew that all this preceding.
Well, if I can be devil's advocate here, I think that, you know, she's from the Pacific Northwest. He's from the Pacific Northwest. They're both athletes. I would think that she would be fairly well apprised of his background in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh. Yeah, I disagree with that.
Yeah.
Really?
I would have to. Yeah.
I'm thinking you about the sexual attraction, the buy-in to the cultural and society norms, and you add those in. I don't remember ever asking anybody I ever dated, what's your criminal background?
I don't
remember going to the public records department in my county and doing a public records check. You know, that is actually one thing that I always recommend when I was working with other survivors is, you know, when you're dating someone, you need to ask questions about their background, and you need to find out. You need not to rely on just their word, because they're not going to tell you the bad stuff.
Yeah.
They're going to hide that, or they're going to have a reason for it, right, Heather? They're going to justify it.
Absolutely. It was somebody else's fault.
They're going to have an excuse. And even if you did, here's where your brain takes over your heart, takes over your brain. Your heart is pounding, and you want to be in love. There's this huge honeymoon stage. There's all this, I will do that, I will do this, I will do that. And you ignore all of that. And here's the deal. When you're working with a perpetrator or an abuser, they count on that.
Yeah.
They have a way to just completely minimize or make you believe that it was somebody else's fault. There is no accountability to this.
Right. The charmingness.
If someone said to you that you were potentially going to be in a relationship, if they were up front and forward and said, look, I have this record or this arrest period or this incident happened in my life and I've learned from my mistakes, this is how I learned, this is how I've moved forward, this is how I've made amends, but it's always about somebody else's fault. And I think, again, not trying to stereotype, but women as caretakers want to make the best for things for people. They want to make it all better.
Yes.
And, you know, even though this woman is strong in her sports figure, I mean, there's a part of her that's tender, probably a little bit naive.
A human being.
She's a human being, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to put all this pressure and I'm saying she's a role model, and to blame her for this is certainly not what we as women want to do. We want to support her. And again, I don't want to be the one to predict her future.
I want to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. Okay,
first of all,
let me throw out the phone number again. We'd love to hear what you have to say about this, because this is kind of the crux of the whole thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, how do we understand domestic violence?
Yes.
So give us a call at 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. Let us know your understanding and what questions you have about this. Meanwhile, I was telling you ladies before we went on air about a columnist in Chicago who had some rather scathing but also some rather provocative things to say about this whole situation with Hope Solo. And he tells himself, or tells us anyway, that he doesn't really believe in that whole athlete as role model thing. Nevertheless, Hope Solo in her own memoir said that she wanted to be treated kind of as an ambassador for girl power, as long as she was able to. Well, what kind of an ambassador can she be when, you know, she's done something like this where everybody who's looking on to it says, wow, she chose a slimy guy for her new husband?
Yeah, I have a lot of trouble with that. I just have so much trouble with that, because that's an outsider viewpoint. And I have trouble taking an outsider viewpoint when I'm hearing of anybody's experience of this type of relationship. And I also
outsiders. We're outsiders.
We are, but we have quite a bit of experience in the field of violence against women.
Okay, all right.
It gives us a different perspective than the general public, I would say. But I also wanted to say in the article that I, you know, the brother's the one who called the police, and they talked to Hope's aunt, and the aunt says he seemed like such a nice guy. He is actually a great singer. He sings like a dream.
Oh, well, that makes him good husband material.
Yeah, and she said he absolutely did not hit Hope. And I find that interesting, because just because of all my experience. But she's and Jeremy, when he spoke to the judge in court, he said, Hope and I were having a fight about where we're going to live, whether we're going to live in Washington State or Florida. And if you look at the locations of those two states, they're just about as far away from each other as you can get. And what we know about Hope now is that she has a lot of support in Washington State, right? She's got history. She's got family. She's got friends. So now he wants to move her to Florida. Does that ring any bells for either of you?
Oh, isolation.
Yeah.
Which is one of the components, or one of the signs to look for,
Yep.
When you're trying to assess for domestic violence, you know,
yeah. And I also
pull her away from all of her support network.
And I also think that the person's statement that you read, Heather, is also very victim blaming. And
mm-hmm.
it also is, I think, what this whole controversy is bringing up for me as a survivor of domestic violence, working in the field, watching other people maneuver these relationships and try to survive in whatever way possible, to me, I feel a great deal of added pressure for her
mm-hmm.
because it's all on her. It's like, well, why? Again, it's the question of, well, why didn't she just leave the abusive relationship as opposed to saying,
why did he stop what
they're doing?
And well, I could interject too as well. There's another young woman who is a strong, empowered woman in the general public, and it's one of our country artists, Taylor Swift. She is all over the news, and people are questioning, is why can't she find someone to love? She's a 22-year-old woman, and she's dated a few people. What is the big deal? Why does she, because she's a role model for girls, she's showing them that you can't find a reliable man? I mean, there's all kinds of crazy accusations in those kinds of statements. It's, why can't this beautiful, powerful, talented, rich young woman of 22 find someone to love? So that makes it, what's wrong with Taylor, right?
Yeah, exactly. When here she is, this beautiful
and she's doing what we would encourage anybody to do, which is take your time and date people, before you get involved. But it's not just Hope. And I really think that puts so much pressure on not only Hope and Taylor, but any woman to think that you have to represent for all of womankind, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and that you have to be in a relationship.
Yeah,
exactly.
That is the ultimate what's going to make you successful. I mean, we all want to be loved. We all want to be accepted. We all want those things as human beings that we are wired to have. But at the same time, I just feel an oversense of sadness now for this Hope. I think that's what I felt initially when I heard about this story. It was like, oh, my gosh, now she's the one getting all this criticism about, well, why did you do this? You're smarter than this. You're an athlete. You're a role model. You're all of these things for young girls, but yet you've turned around and totally, for whatever reasons, and we know there are many reasons, ignored that, went into a very quick relationship, and was married.
Well, and what we know about that is that when it comes to, well, why doesn't she just leave? Well, right now, she has to feel a little defensive about her decision.
Absolutely.
So she's going to be less likely to just leave the next time something bad happens, because she's going, I made this decision, I have to, you know, stick by my decision, I can't just be fly by night, I can't, you know, it adds the pressure not only to her right now, but to lengthening and staying in a bad situation. So
now she's already had this really negative experience with the press, right?
Yep.
Or being with someone who's got this record and was arrested for DV assault 4. So not only is she defensive, but she's also thinking, I have a lot of status to lose here regarding my role model.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, if I can't prove this to be a great relationship and that I picked the right person for myself, then I can lose, you know, endorsements.
Huh?
No, yeah. All those kinds of things.
Yeah, so she has an interest now. She has an investment in trying her damnedest to make this work if it turns out to be something other than what she's expecting.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, and then you add to that the social pressure that says all of us as females have the responsibility for the success of a relationship. It's right with us.
Right.
The day I see sports afield and, GQ with articles about how to keep her happy,
yeah.
Those are the days where I'm going to think that there's some hope. But, you know, all the women's magazines are battered with how to keep your husband happy, how to make your marriage successful. You know, you don't see men's magazines with those things.
Yeah.
And so clearly we're sending the message every way we can that, hey, this success, this relationship sinks or swims right on your shoulders, lady. So you better do everything you can to make it work.
I think it's interesting, Heather, that you and I both noticed that there's a lot of commentary on all the sports radio and sports media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how much, you know, the different standard that we hold women to compared to men.
Oh, please.
You know,
look at how many male athletes have married some silly floozy that they've known for a short time. And do they get any flack about it? No, they get bachelor parties.
I just think that, you know, it's kind of a little bit twisted because they are so focusing all the responsibility on Hope, and that it's a relationship which entails two people. So what we know is that Mr. Stevens is, you know, defending himself and justifying himself.
Yeah.
Hope is hearing that, well, see, and now I'm married, so I have an obligation to make this relationship work.
Yep.
And there's just a whole lot of dynamics going on there that the public, that if, unless you've been in an abusive relationship, you're probably going to have a lot of difficulty understanding. And I'm not saying that they're right or they're wrong, but we cannot understand domestic violence in linear or rational ways.
Because that's not how abusers think.
Yeah.
You know,
or rational dynamic domestic violence. It's very contextual. It depends on the two people in it and everybody around them, right?
Yeah.
So
and when you say everybody around them, look at this aunt is already saying, oh, no, he didn't do anything wrong. Now, maybe he didn't. But the fact is that the aunt is already popping up saying that.
Yeah.
You think that's going to add a little pressure to her?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So here, ladies, here's a question. Let's break this down for our audience. Heather, what's the number for our callers?
646-378-0430. 646-378-0430. We want to hear you.
So I'm going to present a question. Why doesn't she just leave? That ever so question that people ask, as opposed to why doesn't the abuse stop, why does he not stop hurting, to this question that was in a headline here. Hope Solo married Jeremy Stevens after he assaulted her? So when I read that, I think all of the emphasis just on those few words in that question is that it's now all about Hope and that it was her fault that she married him because he assaulted her, as opposed to saying he assaulted her, why doesn't that stop?
Well,
your thoughts about that question?
Well, I think that sometimes, again, because our culture is so focused on the woman, you know, I mean, and the relationship. You know, the woman is the one who makes or breaks the relationship. If it's a successful relationship, it's because of her. So, you know, we're already tuned in to thinking whenever we talk relationship, we're talking woman's responsibility. So we already have that in us as a culture. And so I think the question comes naturally because that's how we've trained ourselves to think. Deborah, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Connie Sue. Definitely, it's all focused on Hope or any survivor of a domestic violence assault. But what I'm also thinking is that in the sports world, there are a lot of bad boys. You know, there are a lot of lawbreakers that are highly paid.
Well, it's a sense of entitlement.
It's
entitlement. I mean, that's what I see.
So now, it's entitlement, exactly.
I'm entitled.
There's also room for them to repent and rehabilitate. You know what I'm talking about? Because I'm thinking.
Yeah, mea culpa. I'm sorry. Okay, slate's clean.
Yeah, I did my anger management. I'm done. Take me back on the team. Give me back my big salary, and we're all good, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, and everybody loves to forgive somebody who's been bad
yes.
and now is good. Yeah, yeah.
So this is kind of a trending pattern. Now, there are some men in the sports world that are trying to change that, like Joe Torre is of the New York Yankees, and he was raised in an abusive home. So he works specifically to raise awareness about the impact that sports can have on young men, and particularly if the violence of the sport itself, right? The conquest, right? We've got to win at all costs.
The power that goes
power
into the power
yeah.
control.
Those concepts, when you do that for a living and then you go home, it's the same as if you're a police officer or you've been in the military and you're at war and you come home. You know, how does that transfer to what the public has in their mind of this perfect family relationship, you know? Those things don't always compute, so it's confusing. I don't know. I just think that, but we don't have that same leeway for women, no matter what our career choice or profession is. It just seems like the general public is so hard on a woman when it comes to that point, that if you're a bad girl, you're a bad girl forever, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you
think? I agree with you 100%.
So let's ask the question, well, why wouldn't she marry him?
Well, I think for me, one of the most telling things is the two things that we've said in this conversation. One is that Deborah pointed out about that Taylor Swift lady. She's 22 years old.
Yep.
You know, 22. That's
so the pressure to get married.
Yeah, do we really, really want a 22-year-old? I mean, do we consider her a spinster? I mean, my mother got married back in the 40s, and she was 17 years old when she got married, and they listed her occupation as spinster. Do we really think Taylor Swift is in danger of being a spinster because she doesn't have a significant other at this point?
No.
Why wouldn't she take on some responsibility or feeling like, oh, my gosh, this is my fault if I didn't do this or if I didn't do that? Basically, what we call in the honeymoon phase is where they're at once they got, you know, after this explosion.
Sure. It was an unfortunate incident. I mean, we all lose it on occasion. I mean, gosh, look at the pressure we were under. You know, it's happened. I'm so sorry. And here's some flowers, and I can be charming again. And, you know, what young woman wouldn't think, oh, okay, all right, a mistake was made. We're not going to crucify somebody over one mistake.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that, unfortunately, she is going to feel a great deal of pressure to make sure that this relationship succeeds. Just
oh, she's going to be there long, long after she realizes she shouldn't be, simply because of that pressure.
Yeah, and we could also play, as you like to call it, Heather, devil's advocate. So what if this really was not a domestic violence assault for? Situation. What if it really was what the brother described as two or three men came in and caused this fight? Why would they allow two to three strange people to come in their house at a family party before a wedding, number one? That sounds a little suspect to me. Why
yeah,
is he upstairs in the bedroom? Was someone looking for him?
Yeah.
Because I know
that if there was an altercation at my house and the police were coming...
Yeah,
I'd dive under the bed. I mean,
other criminal activity, I think he, I'm not saying allegedly, I don't know for sure, but some of his reckless driving included alcohol
mm-hmm.
and maybe marijuana, I'm not sure.
Oh, okay, so it was the drugs that did it.
No, what I'm saying, Heather, is that maybe if it wasn't DV assault 4, if it was the scenario that the brother describes, so that still puts Mr. Jeremy Stevens in a rather negative light.
Yeah, I know. But what I was doing was pointing out some of the stereotypes here that people who might, see this situation or hear of this situation might go, oh, it was the drugs. It was alcohol. That was the problem. So, see, he just won't drink again and they won't have that problem again.
Yeah. except they're all drunk than I do.
The other point, you know, that I was talking about was the fact that the aunt felt that she should point out that he didn't do it.
Yeah.
He didn't do it. Jeremy didn't do it. Now, why would the aunt do that? That suggests to me, and again, I'm just picking things based on previous experience, but that suggests to me
a cover
that,
up.
Well, not only that, but an acceptance of this boy's behavior. Now,
yeah.
And that there's going to be some family pressure to accept that behavior.
Yeah. And let's Hope and her fiance are in their 30s, so they're not children.
Mm-hmm.
They are adults.
Yeah.
You know, like we were talking before, Heather Swift is only 22. There's a difference in my mind between a 22-year-old and a 32-year-old.
Yeah, there is. There is.
I mean, you've had a little bit more life experience and all that sort of thing. But I don't know. I just find this whole thing really, you know, interesting. I hope that our listeners are getting something out of this that they didn't know beforehand. If nothing else, they know that Richland, Washington is the scorched earth of defunct nuclear.
Well, let's get back.
Wait, that's her perspective, so I want to honor her perspective.
I don't know if that would really even come from Hope. That might have come from her. She had someone help her write the book, I believe.
Yeah, I believe so, too.
Lyrical.
It sounds much more dramatic. And it wasn't really a testing site. I mean, I thought it was just a manufacturing facility.
A nuclear reactor there. And
didn't actually test nuclear bombs there.
No. It was for electrical production and stuff like that, I believe.
Yeah.
And some of the waste product got into the, you know, it gets into the land and the river right around you. So,
but it wasn't a testing site.
Yeah, it wasn't a testing site. It wasn't like they dropped bombs. No.
I know.
It wasn't like they took nuclear material and put it in the food or, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's back up just a little bit. Because when we started this conversation, Deborah, you were saying, are we asking the right questions?
Yeah.
Now, Hope Solo is somebody who's in the news. We've heard of her, you know, one way or another, or to one degree or another. What about Cousin Sue? What if the exact same situation is happening to Cousin Sue?
Yeah, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, what questions should we be asking?
Well, the first question that comes to mind is, how many relationships start quickly in this way? I mean, we don't know how long they've been dating. We don't know the history of the relationship. I mean, maybe they only just met and got married in 2 months. But who hasn't done that? Lots of couples have gone, oh, well, let's go to Vegas and get married.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first question in my mind.
But realistically, I mean, oftentimes when you hear that, you kind of have a little grin like, uh-huh, and how long will that take, you know?
Absolutely.
Or what's the other thought? They had to get married. That's kind of an old-fashioned thought, but that's what we used to think in the 70s.
Yeah, nobody
had
to get married.
They had to get married.
Yeah. So Pinkley, what do we ask?
I think you want me to jump in, Connie Sue?
Well, no, I want to respond to that.
Okay, you go first.
So the question I would ask is, why do we put all the criticism on Hope? That would be my first criticism, my first question of critical thinking of why is this all about her?
Mm-hmm.
And the pressure that is going to ensue, which I believe will occur, and maybe she felt a complete loyalty or obligation to marry this person. I mean, we don't know. We don't know the extenuating circumstances. And again, I don't want to be the predictor of her future. I want her to be the predictor of that. But I also would like to think that on some level, out of this experience, who knows, maybe she'll become a spokesperson around domestic violence. But that's probably the last thing that's on her mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, to take, why don't we take some of that pressure off of her and in every way we can as a society support her decision, whether we think it's right or wrong, and be there for her regardless of what happens.
Yeah, but that's kind of utopia, isn't it?
Well,
yeah.
You know me, Heather. I'm the hopeful one. I'm the one who's the peacemaker and the one who, you know, just wants to
yeah.
make sure everything is okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
well, here's my thought on that.
Okay,
what
what's your
if
thought?
We as a society said to Mr. Jeremy Stevens, what is your accountability? If this is true or it's not true, does it seem ethical that you would want to get married the morning, you know, later the day that you got out of jail? You know, what is that about, Mr. Stevens? Can you think of something else? You know, like, it could be like, I would rather we wait until we get this straightened out. I don't want to get married with this cloud over our heads.
Mm-hmm. Which seems
if
like a pretty
no
reasonable response.
Married, if there's no need for them to be married right that second, it was a small family wedding. It wasn't like they were having a Taj Mahal and 300,000 people had been invited, you know?
And mm-hmm. so what if they were?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, what is more important? You know, yeah, what if they were having that? What is more important, the relationship or the perception of the relationship? And that goes, that is the accountability of both parties, right? And, I mean, I think it's bad that Hope didn't feel enough support for herself to say, you know, I just want to put this off for a little while. Let's get
yeah.
this straightened out. Let's not get married with this cloud over our head. You know, what would the world look like then? Is that a possibility?
Yeah.
That's the question. How can we as society or as general public make it okay for people to change their mind based on new information? She just got some new information, right, about him?
Oh, yeah.
Now she knows he has this record, whether she did before or not, we don't know. But now she does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can we give her permission to say, hey, wait a minute, Mr. Jeremy, I still have feelings for you, but let's just slow it down and let's postpone the wedding for a while.
Yeah, yeah, let's
you
let
know?
Things settle down.
Yeah.
But I also think that, like you pointed out, Pinkley, about the running off to Reno, there is a certain romance in our country, and I think there has been for 50 years, of just kind of, you know, the immediately falling in love and immediately running off and getting married, that there's a romance about that. And so that could be a part of this, too, you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that that's where, you know, the heart and the brain don't always make the connection between, you know, your hopefulness, your romance, your feelings of being in love take over your thought process, your rationale, and, you know, people make mistakes. I mean, you go into all kinds of reasonings about people's behavior, and because you love them, you want to believe the best in them, and that's where the domestic violence, and again, for our listeners, it's not about just the physical aspect. It's about the power and control over the emotional and the verbal. Like we pointed out earlier, Deb was saying, they were fighting over where they were going to live. The image that comes to mind is, yeah, boy, those are in two totally opposite parts of the country. And what is that about? Is it, you know, isolation? Why would they even have that large of an altercation alleged about where they're going to live? I mean, that is not that just does not depict a harmonious, compromising relationship, let's communicate about this. Where you're going to live is a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I'd like to come back to a little bit about family history. A lot of us grew up in families that were not ideal. And let's face it, until you're probably middle-aged, the only role model you have for a family is the one that you grew up in.
Right.
And if there was some sort of rocky background there, if there was something that influenced, you know, Hope's feelings and ideas about what makes a successful marriage and relationship, you know, I mean, we can't discount the impact of the family of origin. in future decisions. Can we, Deborah?
No, exactly. I mean, what I described, what her book described about her, or her bio described about her father, a con man and a philanderer.
Yeah.
Arrested for embezzlement, and after getting out of jail, became homeless. So is this her male role model?
Yeah.
Well, and that's what I was saying earlier. I mean, we can't make judgments on just because she has this external power as a woman. I mean, everybody's looking up to her. We don't know what her internal dialogue is. We don't know what her expectations are. And we don't know what, again, what role models. And she's had in her own life. And that's not about judgment. That's not about, oh, because you come from a home that's not what we would typically refer to as the mom-pa or the stable home environment, isn't necessarily always a predictor of your future, but it certainly has an impact. So we can't go into that with her thoughts on that.
So again, going back to Susie down the road, what questions do we ask? And if we happen to know Susie, i.e. Hope, what questions do we ask her?
Well, I would want to ask her, are you sure? Do you have all the information you need to make an informed decision? Because it appears that you may not.
Well, and again, Deb, I appreciate that question, but again, it's the heart over mind rationale. It's the two don't always connect. My question to her is Hope. I guess it's more of a statement. It's that we're here to support you, especially as being an advocate in whatever decisions that you make, to support you. And we've all made mistakes, and I'm not trying to minimize a potential situation, but I don't want to put any blame on her. I don't want to set her up for failure. And certainly if there is a change in a relationship that you wish to see happen, whether it's to take yourself out of the relationship or whatever that may be, that we're here to support her.
That sounds really ideal. How often?
Yeah,
do you think
I don't disagree with you, Connie Sue, but I'm a little more direct in my advocacy, especially this late in my career, because, and a lot of it's based on my personal experience. Nobody spoke to me clearly and directly about what they observed in my abusive relationship.
Right.
Hindsight, I think it would have been helpful.
And
so
I agree. And so maybe the questions could be put in maybe all of those questions could be put forward. But from our perspective and my personal perspective, with regards to our radio show and our Three Women, Three Ways, our Three Divas, is that this is in no way meaning to not support her in a way that we are strong women and that we have lived through many different things and would like to share those experiences.
Or that you're a strong woman and you can still make a mistake.
Yes.
And you can still survive.
Or you can still change your mind.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Either one
of
those. That's a message that is not really conveyed to women, I don't believe.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you 100%, Deborah.
100%.
Okay, so I'm a single woman, and I go out and I find a charming guy, and wow, things are happening fast, but he's so cool, he's so charming. Pinkley, what do I ask myself?
That's a really good question, Heather. And if you came to me and said, wow, I met this guy and we're getting married in 2 months, I would probably say I really want to be happy for you, but I would definitely ask you questions. And I think the first question I would ask is, how are you going to continue being Heather? How are you going to continue supporting your ideas and your beliefs and be the person that you know you can be without giving yourself totally to another person? Because I do believe that in our society that is generally the expectation that we have of women, is we're giving up who we are in order to be married.
Well, gosh, yeah, we're two becoming one. And usually he gets to be the one, I think.
That's the Bible. Isn't it in the Bible and the Quran and the Torah?
Yeah.
All those mystical biblical texts. Well, I would choose I'm going to be direct with you, Heather. I'm going to say, did you do a background check on this man?
Of course not, Deborah. Come on.
I'm going to say why not.
Well, you're so suspicious. It's just because you've worked with all of those women who've been abused.
I am. Please, please just do it for me, if not for yourself. Or do you want me to do it? If I'm your best friend, I might do it for you.
And then what happens if it comes back negative?
Yeah,
well,
Deborah, there's no background. There was nothing on his record.
Oh, yeah, there was stuff on his record.
Oh, no, there wasn't.
All of his arrest is on his record, Pinkley. That's public record.
No, there is no record. He was so charming. He's so charming. And
Oh, my hypothetical guy. Yeah.
Yeah, my hypothetical person has no record.
Ah.
Well, I'd like to believe that, too, but should we just look and make sure?
Oh, absolutely. I already did.
Well.
There's no record, no. And short of hiring a private detective.
I would keep, I would still say I love you and support you. I'm going to do, be your friend no matter what. But I always go back to when I was the mother of small children. Did I want to know where they were playing? I wanted to know what house they were at. I wanted to know the parents. Were the parents home? How can I reach you? What's their phone number? So why don't we do that for ourselves when we're looking for a mate? Why don't we say, what's your family relationship?
Yeah.
Where do you live? Oh, you're living with, you're living in a home for sex offenders. That's interesting.
Yeah. Why did you choose that?
Oh, you forgot to tell me that,
Yeah.
So they're not going to tell the bad things. And so I think that I really am a proponent for that, for if you would do that for someone else you love, you should do it for yourself. If you would check people out for anybody you love, you should do it for yourself, too.
I think that is the message, the takeaway message for our listeners is that to really hone in on your intuition and to love and care for yourself the way we do other people.
Yeah. That's good.
And that the relationship is not a house on fire. You don't have to act right this second or it will be destroyed.
Right.
What's the rush?
Yep, exactly. Of course, like you pointed out, Pinkley, when we're young and in love, or maybe when we're old and in love too, we do feel like we just want to move right on,
Well, and I think that's, I think that goes hand in hand with just, that so-called being in love. I mean, there is a period of time when, your emotions can calm down and now you're able to think rationally. And that's really the point of time where you really make your assessments in your relationship. Are we compatible? Where are we going to live? I mean,
and unfortunately for a lot of people, that comes after you say I do.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about so much today, and our time is just zipping past. We usually end these conversations that we have with a quote, and I can't wait to hear Deborah's quote for today. But first, I want to say thank you for joining us. We love to hear what you have to contribute to our topics. We'd love to have you visit our webpage. We'd love to have you join us next week, where we'll have another, hopefully, pretty enticing topic. I don't know. Hopefully, it won't be about Hope Solo next week, but it will be something where we can disagree, agree, and hopefully learn a lot. Deborah, you got a quote for us?
I do. The quote today: if you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. And that is from Archbishop Desmond Tutu. So put that into context of today's conversation.
So that's kind of like saying if not choosing is choosing.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
And I'm happy to say that we are three divas.
Three ways.
We're three women. Three women.
Three ways.
Three divas, three women, and three ways.
Absolutely.
Sometimes a little confused. Always, hopefully, with some really good information for you. And, again, we really hope to see you next week. If you have ideas for our show, head our website. And, Deborah, how can they do that?
They can email us on our show page. You can send us a message that way. Or you can go on our Facebook page. which
yep.
is Three Divas LLC, and you can send us your info. So thank you for listening.
See you next week.
See you next week.